Opening statements will be 2.5 minutes each. Answers to the questions will be given 2 minutes each. Closing statements will be 3 minutes each. The timers in the front row will display the appropriate flags. Yellow reminds you that you have only 30 seconds remaining to answer the question, and red means that your time is fully elapsed. Speaking after the red flag is displayed will result in reduction of time for closing arguments for the one who exceeds his or her time. Again, please hold your applause until the debate's conclusion. So we will begin with opening statements. Governor Parnell.
Thank you, and Ketchikan, it's great to be back, and Saxman, it's great to be back with you today. A week and a half ago, I was here to make that announcement about the two ferries being built in Alaska, but built in Ketchikan, and that was exciting news. That's the kind of economic opportunity that with strong leadership, visionary leadership in a company too, and a strong community, we can accomplish together, not just here in Ketchikan, but across the state. And as your governor, I have steadily worked to grow opportunity for Alaskans, not just here, but throughout Southeast and throughout Alaska. Here in Ketchikan, I've fought for you, for your local jobs and your local businesses, fought for the shipyard, Alaska Ferries built by Alaskans in Alaska. I nailed down the Marine Highway System headquarters here in Ketchikan and just loved it when I flew in today and I saw five ferries sitting out there, plus the IFA ferry out there. All the ferries are going to be here today except for one, I'm told. Together, we brought the cruise ships back, fueling Alaska's and Ketchikan's small businesses. I supported funding for hydropower, the fire hall, the library, the new fitness center, funding for the water street, the trestles and bridges there, that project, because I know that infrastructure is key to quality of life and economic development. I protected the jobs associated with our timber industry and supported responsible resource development in the timber industry all throughout Southeast, including here. Supported the fishing industry with state investment in management, marketing, and infrastructure. You all know where I stand. And for all Alaskans, I am the candidate who's optimistic about our future. I see that we've got a bright future ahead of us, and I see it because Alaskans know how to grasp opportunity in front of us. I'm running for re-election because the job of clearing paths of opportunity for us and for our children is not done. That path of opportunity needs to be wider and deeper for us and for future generations. We will drive more economic opportunity and more economic development to Southern Southeast. We're going to create even more opportunities for our young people. And I started with those Alaska Performance Scholarships that over 3,000 Alaska young people have earned. I'll continue the fight against domestic violence and sexual assault. And we're going to get a gas line and blow out career technical education opportunities, just make those even more possible for our young people. My policies are thoughtful, consistent, stable, and certain, always for Alaskans, always with our future in mind. And I'm asking for your vote in November. Thank you.
Ms. Clift.
So do I push this?
No, the mic should be on.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, first of all, I want to say thank you for inviting me. I've really enjoyed my stay here in Ketchikan. I stayed at the Gilmore Hotel last night and ate at Annabelle's, and it was awesome. And everybody has been just wonderful. And I've never been here before, and I really have enjoyed it. I am the Libertarian candidate for governor. The Libertarian Party was founded in 1971 as a protest to the two-party system. They felt that there was really no difference in the two major parties and wanted a party based on the principles on which this country was founded. Recent events here in Alaska bear out that there really is no difference between the Republican and the Democratic Party. Today, you, the voters of Alaska, need to make a choice between the big government candidates and the candidate who represents individual liberty. You need to make a choice between a woman who will fight for your individual freedom and minimize government, or you may choose career politicians who will do or say anything to get elected. Alaska has a libertarian history. Back in the mid-70s to early 80s, we had libertarians in the state legislature. As a result of their efforts, Alaskans today enjoy a permanent fund dividend and no state income tax. That is why we need a libertarian governor today. I'll be able to trim and slash state budgets until we get down to the bare-bones government that we can afford. With oil revenues dwindling, only a libertarian governor can keep us from going back to the state income tax. We need to keep revenue flowing into the permanent fund for investment so that our permanent fund dividends will continue. Alaska was founded on the pioneer spirit of rugged individualism, and Alaskans want to be able to take care of themselves and their own families instead of relying on big government to supply their needs. So I am the best choice for governor today. And I believe a good leader shows by example that she has high principles. I'll be able to vote to work on both sides of the aisle because I am neither Democrat nor Republican. And I'm not conservative or liberal. I'll always make decisions for smaller government, individual privacy, and I'm out of time. So thank you very much.
Mr. Walker.
Good afternoon. It's great to be back in Ketchikan. It was quite a story getting here. We had an opportunity to see a little bit more southeast by the fog in Juneau. We had to, my running mate, Byron Malata, and I were able to come through Cake and meet some folks there. We now have sort of a campaign message in Cake and then on to Ketchikan. So it's another chapter of a pretty incredible story that we've had. Those that don't know me, I'm a pro-life Christian. I'm a husband of 37 years, father of four children, grandfather of two, and soon to be two more grandchildren. I was born in the territory of Alaska in Fairbanks. I grew up in a construction family. I grew up pounding nails at a very early age in Valdez. Before the earthquake, we were house builders. When the earthquake shaking, we became house movers, and we moved them to the new town of Valdez. Worked construction on the oil pipeline. It was the first time I swung a hammer and actually got paid for it. In the family business, we didn't get regular paychecks. I've commercial fish. I've owned many businesses throughout my life. Working as a builder, I put myself through college, through law school. My wife and I have owned a law firm in Anchorage. We specialize in municipal law, local municipalities, and also oil and gas law, representing municipalities. My mission, or what brings me to run for governor, has a lot to do with the future of the state. When I ran the first time, Governor Heckle came to me and said, "You run as independent." And I did not follow his advice. And whenever I see Irmeli Heckle now, she shakes her finger at me and she said, "Wally told you to run as independent." And I am running as independent now, and it feels very good to be doing that. I'm very honored to be running with Byron Malott as my running mate. You know, it's really about our mission and why we are running together. It's really about the future of the state. We think we need leadership. We need to have a vision for the state. We need to have a long-term plan. We are very concerned about the fiscal situation in our state. I'm sure that will come up in the debate today. But what excites me is not the fact that we'll be able to fix the fiscal situation. We have a great future in this state. We're the most resource-rich state in the nation. We just have a distribution problem. So we will solve that problem, build the infrastructure we need to make that happen. Thank you very much for this opportunity. I hope we have your vote on November 4th.
Okay, we'll start with our questions. The first question is regarding health care, and it will start with Ms. Clift. Would your administration reconsider expanding the availability of Medicaid in Alaska, and how will it address the increasing difficulty many Alaskans have in finding affordable health insurance?
I would not be expanding Medicaid at this time. At this point, it's only 2 years now until the end of that offer that we had from the federal government. And at the end of that 2 years of time, the state government would have to take over the payments for Medicare, and it would be the matching funds that it is currently with the rest of the Medicaid payments. So I don't think that's a good idea because we're going to get people on Medicaid and they'll feel that they're entitled, and then in 2 years, then they will not be we will not be able to afford it anymore. As for expanding access to health care, I think we need to use a lot of health care professionals that are not MDs so that we have a lot more opportunities for people to get access to health care. So we will be hiring a lot of professionals that will be working with MDs, but they can work kind of like the community health aid system where they have contact with a doctor if they need one. And that would help people get access, and it would also help keep the costs down.
Mr. Walker.
I will be accepting expanded Medicaid immediately. The reason we will be doing that is that it helps somewhere between 26 and 40,000 Alaskans, and really it's not the numbers for me. It helps Alaskans, and that's what I'll be doing, is making decisions about what's best for Alaskans. There are a number of reasons I'll be doing that. Number one is we've already paid for it. We paid for it. Somebody's getting the benefit of what we paid. It's just not Alaska's not getting that benefit. Let me put the proviso. The proviso is the acceptance of it with the assuming the federal government continues to fund it 100%, which they are contracted to do for 3 years. If that changes, we'll revisit it. But in the meantime, we will be helping thousands and thousands of Alaskans that do not presently have health care. The other issue is it creates approximately 4,000 new health care jobs in Alaska, and it brings down the cost of health care in general. Those individuals get health care by going to the emergency room, and we pay for that. That's not a health care plan. By the time they do that, there's preventative health care that they could have received prior to going to the emergency room. So I'm certainly in favor of that. We need to do everything we can in Alaska to bring down the cost of health care. There's a number of things that we can do that we have not done to bring down the cost of health care, and we have to be proactive on that. It affects every area of our life. It affects the workers' comp rates, health care. We've got to bring down that. We have some of the highest health care costs in the nation, and we've got to do everything we can to bring it down. So I will be accepting expanded Medicaid.
Governor Parnell.
Thank you. I chose not to pursue expanded Medicaid. We obviously need more accessible, affordable health care, but I want to just speak to why I did not. Alaska has 700,000 people roughly, and about 151,000 of those are currently on Medicaid. Our current Medicaid system is not sustainable by every measure, nationally and on the state, from the state perspective as well. Those 151,000 people take the total spending, and total spending on those people who qualify is approximately $11,000 per person. To expand Medicaid requires us to pay $44,000 per person for those expanded, for expanding Medicaid. That is, to my way of thinking, not a smart way to go. I think we can develop a smarter way to move here. Bill Walker indicated we've already paid for it. We have not. Our nation has a $17 trillion debt. We will be borrowing money to pay for expanded Medicaid. Our kids and grandkids will have to pay that debt if we take the billions from the federal government today. I think there's a smarter way where we can provide accessible, affordable health care. I tasked a Medicaid Review Advisory Group to work this year to come up with a way. Mr. Walker also indicated that it would add 4,000 jobs. Also false. That was from a report that made some bad assumptions, and the assumption was that there are 43,000 people who don't qualify for Medicaid. There are actually 10,000 to 12,000. It also made the assumption that those people do not have access to primary health care, which they do through the community health centers and the public health centers and the tribal network that we all pay for with our tax dollars. I think there's a smarter, more efficient way to get access for those at the poverty level or below. I'll continue working with the Medicaid Review Group to do that. Thank you.
Our next question will start with Mr. Walker. It regards the Alaska Marine Highway System. The state of Alaska is building two day ferries and is designing a replacement for the aging ferry that serves southwest Alaska. How will your administration address the half-century-old mainline ferries and maintain the vital service between southeast Alaska, Washington State, and British Columbia?
I had the pleasure of riding on some of the initial inaugural voyages on the ferry. I'm from 30 years in Valdez. I remember that well. That was very, very exciting. I seem to be getting older, and the ferries are getting a bit older, and it's time to replace those. And I applaud that what has happened recent here on that announcement. I applaud the bipartisan coalition in the legislature that created the funding vehicle for that. We have to replace those. In my first choice by far is the replacement is done here in Ketchikan at the local shipyard. I mean, anything we can do, I brag regularly about what goes on in Ketchikan because you actually make a product. And I love when I go to the shipyard and I meet a young lady and I ask her where she's from, and she says, a welder. She says, I was born here in Ketchikan. The next young person I meet, he was born here in Ketchikan. I love that. That's a rarity in our state. So you are the shining examples of what we need to be doing more of. So we need to replace the ferries. Obviously, we need to have a funding vehicle to do that. We need to make sure that there are ferries that can be used year-round and be able to withstand the weather that we have in Alaska, because they go out as far as, obviously, out as far as Dutch Harbor. So our business in Valdez was totally dependent upon a ferry showing up on schedule. And I think that that's critical. That it's a mainstay of our economy in this state, not just in Southeast, in South Central and Western Alaska as well. So I'm fully supportive of the Alaska Marine Highway System.
Governor Parnell.
The Alaska Marine Highway System is Southeast highways. I mean, it connects us as communities. I can say that now as a Juneau resident. It connects us as a people. It connects us as businesses. It enables our livelihoods. I'm fully committed to ensuring the sustainability and the perpetuation of the Alaska Marine Highway System. I'm also cognizant that it takes strong leadership in communities, in companies like Vigor Alaska today, Alaska Ship and Dry Dock yesterday, and a leader who recognizes the opportunity that's here to build Alaska ferries here. I have a responsibility as governor to make sure that the money the legislature gives me appropriates for me to negotiate a ferry gets spent wisely. Vigor Alaska said they could get us two ferries built in Ketchikan for that total of $120 million that was appropriated that I actually proposed in my budget to fund those two ferries. Through some tough negotiations, the shipyard came through. They do what Alaskans do, and they won the bid. It was something that was, I think it's going to be, it's just going to set kind of a cornerstone on a foundation for Alaska as being, having the corner on the maritime industry. It's a new industry for Alaska, but here in Ketchikan is where it starts. So I'm excited about those two new ferries being built here. That will give the Ketchikan shipyard a leg up when the next ferry, the next mainline ferry is built. I helped to secure funding. I think it's about the first $40 or $50 million on that mainline ferry. That's in design now, and we'll continue moving forward. But let's get these ferries built here. Let's get them built well, on budget, on time. And Ketchikan will see years of shipbuilding to come. Thank you.
Ms. Clift.
I think Alaska Marine Highway is a wonderful concept, and it has been the main transportation for this area for many, many years. I think that all of the state transportation money that is dedicated to this area should go into keeping the Marine Highway maintained and in production. And I'm ecstatic that we're getting those two ferries built here in Ketchikan. I'm hoping that there will be lots of jobs for the people here in this area because of the shipyards going into production on those two ferries, and I think that's a wonderful thing. I know there's a lot of talk about some road systems in this area, but they all depend on the ferries, so the ferries are the main idea that we need to keep going, and we need to keep money flowing into that system and into maintaining that system.
Our next question relates to logging, and it will begin with Governor Parnell. How important is timber harvesting to your plan to spur economic growth in Southeast Alaska?
Timber harvesting is incredibly important to the jobs and the families represented by those jobs in Southeast Alaska, as well as South Central and the interior as well. I have fought for your timber jobs, not just in Alaska, but in Washington, D.C., in the Secretary's office. On several occasions, I spoke with him and advocated for that Big Thorn sale, which we took a step forward on this last day or two. But one of the issues here is that D.C. has taken control away from regional decision-making, from local decision-making. And that is a huge problem because the forest is there for us as Southeast residents to use and to access. And when the federal government throws blocks in our way, whether through endangered species listings, whether through delays in permitting, whether through impeding access in terms of road building, for a place, for a rainforest, or for a Tongass forest that's supposed to be multiple use to really be held on to for a single purpose, when the U.S. Forest Service is starting to charge money to take pictures of the forest, I think we have a federal government that's out of control. Now, I will tell you that I can speak with Secretary Vilsack at a very respectable level and respectful manner. When he called me and said, Governor Parnell, the sequestration is going to require me to take back those timber receipts, I didn't just give him a knee-jerk no. I said, what's your legal basis for making that request of me? and you could have heard the crickets. I mean, you heard some crickets because you could have heard a pin drop. There was no legal basis for it, and I said no. And they went and found the money elsewhere. So I will always stand up for timber jobs, and I will continue making sure that our families here have that opportunity. Thank you.
Ms. Clift.
Alaska's natural resources must be developed. That's the way we have economic liberty. And timber is a very important resource in this area. So as a libertarian, I would like to get the feds away from Alaska. There's too many rules and regulations. There's too much control. There's too much EPA interference. There are delays and there are environmental studies, and there's all kinds of things that they have put in our ways, roadblocks in our ways. And I will fight with every power that I have to make sure that those roadblocks are removed and we can have a viable timber industry going on from now on. We believe in economic liberty. Economic liberty provides an environment that means more dollars on the table and more jobs for Alaskans. And as governor, that's what I will bring.
Mr. Walker.
You know, a driving force for us to become a state was our timber resource opportunities and to have better control over that ourselves. We've watched that dwindle over the years and to virtually come to a complete halt. I'm glad to see some small sales taking place, but not nearly enough to really sustain an economy. I'll take what we can get. There's much more we can do. You know, when the President of the United States comes to Alaska, I will meet with them. I will meet with him, and when he's on his way to an Asia trade mission, I'll meet with him with my suitcase and say, where's my seat? We've got some things to talk about on the 11-hour flight between here and North Korea, or South Korea, where he went. We need to engage with the administration. I think that's imperative. But when they come to Alaska, I think we need to show them the respect that they're entitled to, whichever party they are, and encourage them to understand our state. You know, the roadless rule has really taken a toll on timber harvest in this area. You know, infrastructure is what I'm all about. My building background, the role of government in Alaska, I believe, is to create the infrastructure for our economy to work. And so I will be very aggressive in that regard. I'll be very respectful, but I will be dealing firsthand with the federal government to help them understand what we need to do. And I know that there's lots of litigation associated with timber sales. We've certainly seen that. I think there's I would like a different approach with that. I think there's an approach that certainly very aggressive on the state side, but also sit down and say, look, we need an economy. We need to be able to work. We have the resources here. So I will be very aggressive on timber sales in Alaska. Thank you.
All right. This next question will start with Ms. Clift, and it is regarding social ills. It was submitted via email and asks, what are your plans to reduce sexual assault, domestic violence, substance abuse, and suicide in Alaska? And how specifically do you intend to reduce or prevent the impact of these social ills on children and adolescents?
Let me get that repeated so I can address
sure.
each of those things. There's a lot of stuff there.
Okay. So the question is, what are your plans to reduce sexual assault, domestic violence, substance abuse, and suicide in Alaska? And how specifically do you intend to reduce or prevent the impact of these social ills on children and adolescents?
Well, first of all, I have studied this quite a bit, and I would like to say that it all starts with education. We need to make sure that people understand that pain and suffering is not part of affection for your family. And I think that this is something that is ingrained in certain cultures, that there is some kind of pain involved with being in love with somebody else. And I think that this is got to be educated. People have to be educated about the fact that when you love somebody, you don't hurt them. And I think this is a terrible thing in that there's a lot of people that are dependent on these relationships, and they think that they have to put up with a lot of abuse in their home to maintain that relationship. So that's the first thing that I would do about domestic assault is I would make education available. I would also make support groups available in each of the villages and in all of the towns where we can find out where there'll be somebody to call if you are in a situation where you need to get out of that situation. You need to have somebody to call, a friend to go to. You need all of that. substance abuse, again, it's a problem with education. It's a problem with people taking personal responsibility for their own lives. A lot of our villages are dry villages, and they. But that doesn't keep people from using drugs or alcohol just because the village is dry or because it's illegal. Suicide is a factor of not having enough future ahead of you, of graduating from school or leaving school, and not having a goal, not understanding how you can advance yourself. And I think, again, it all starts with the children and the adolescents, and we need to protect them. Thank you.
Mr. Walker.
Alaska, unfortunately, has the highest rate in all those of any place in the nation. We've had that for many, many years. I want to see what happens in the states that have the lowest rate. Which state is that? What do they do differently that we don't do? You know, I will choose action, and the action will consist of the following. Aaron's Law. Aaron's Law is a law that's been passed by 19 states. Aaron's Law says that it provides for education of our young people about domestic violence and sexual assault at an age-appropriate level. And it's the best way to defend for our children to defend themselves is with education. That's the greatest defense we can have as far as what to do, what's inappropriate, who to call. I think that's absolutely critical. I will also... when someone comes to my office as governor and to tell me about sexual assault going on in the National Guard, I will do an investigation immediately. I will not wait 4 years. I've dealt with that professionally for clients, and that's the way it's handled. When someone comes in and makes an allegation, that alone is sufficient to do an investigation. That should have been done long, long ago. To not do that sends a very wrong message to the victims and others who may be in a similar situation. We need, in the suicide rates in rural Alaska, young Alaska Native men are 13 higher than the national average. There are a number of ways to bring that. We need to bring that down. We need an economy in rural Alaska. In order to have an economy, we need to bring down the cost of energy. We need to allow them to have a path forward out of the situation they may find themselves in, and we can only do that with career training and lower cost energy. It's a very, very high problem in our state is the sexual assault, domestic violence, and suicide rates.
Governor Parnell.
I was taught by my parents to address a big lie head on, and so I'm going to do it right now. Well, Bill Walker just said that I did nothing in the face of sexual assault victims coming to my office or me learning about them is an absolute falsehood. I went to my leadership in the National Guard and investigated in 2010. In fact, multiple times in 2011, 2012 as well. Senator Begich did the same thing in 2012 and found the same thing that I did, that everything appeared reasonably handled at the time. Senator Murkowski found the same thing in 2013 when she had a separate federal agency take a look at these charges. It wasn't until I had specific facts about how our command structure was failing these victims in February that I called in the Office of Complex Investigations to do that deep dive. So I want to set the record straight there. But going back to this problem, this epidemic of domestic violence and sexual assault, I had a person who thanked me last March for what the Choose Respect Initiative has done for their community. It's a community of about 400 people. 5 years ago, the woman said she came into the community as a new teacher, and she was told that 100% of the girls in her high school would be sexually assaulted in high school. And she was flabbergasted and floored. But she said, that has all changed today. And she said, it started with the Choose Respect Initiative. It started because people in the community were raised up and became mentors for the young people in that high school. And I said, how can you know that nobody in that high school has been or will be sexually assaulted? And she said, because today, every one of them has a healthy relationship with an adult, and they would speak to it. So the Choose Respect initiative has been about prevention, those Choose Respect rallies in 170 communities. It's been about intervention, getting more VPSOs and troopers into communities that didn't have any. And it's been about supporting our shelters and the counseling services there. So thank you.
All right, this next question will start with Mr. Walker and deals with coastal zone management. The state of Alaska currently does not have a coastal zone management program. In your view, do coastal communities have adequate opportunities to participate in development decisions that affect them? And would your administration support any changes to the status quo?
You know, I come from local government. That's my background, Valdez, and as well as my professional work representing municipalities. I believe in local input. I believe that one of the reasons that causes myself and Byron Malott to seek this office is that we're concerned about the lack of, over the years, we're pulling more and more control, opportunity for, not control, but input from local government. Coastal zone management provided that. I'm not aware of projects that coastal zone management process stopped, but it provided input early on, and that's very important from the local level. If something's going to be done in your area, there should be input early on, not after a decision is made, and then you have 3 minutes to testify and give your input. The problem when you take away local control, local input, is then the only tools available is for them to seek some legal redress, and that's what you don't want. So you want them to be able to have an opportunity to provide input, be at the table early on. You know, I was from Valdez. There's an organization created after the oil spill, the Prince William Sound Regional Citizens Advisory Council, funded by the industry, and they work collaboratively on joint projects. There's really no issue, and because of that, we end up with a safer shipping lanes and shipping traffic out of Prince William Sound in the Gulf of Alaska. So I'm a big believer in having local input as early on in the process as possible, and that, I think, actually is a more expeditious way rather than to take it away. House Bill 77 was another example of again, removing some input opportunity for local government. So I'm very, very supportive of local government having input early on in the process, not on a veto basis, but provide input early on.
Governor Parnell.
The people have spoken, and the people spoke in the form of turning down the reestablishment of the coastal zone management in the initiative process. So we will not be returning to the coastal zone management program. But I can tell you that local government, local people have input and have a seat at the table on every environmental permitting decision through a robust permitting process. And I'd have to ask the question, the opposite of what Mr. Walker just did, and say, name one project that has moved forward today to permitting that shouldn't have and wouldn't have if the coastal zone management process had been in place. Nobody's been able to name one. And the reason is because there are multiple opportunities for Alaskans to have that input and to bring their own science forward for people, for the decision makers to consider. And you have decision makers who get held accountable for their actions. So at this point, the people have spoken, and I'm sticking with that vote. Thank you.
Ms. Clift.
Yes, coastal zone management was rejected. And I think that the local input is the most important input for all of this. So I agree with, actually both of you said the same thing, that local input was more important. And I believe that all of our natural resources need to be developed in the most environmentally safe way. And I think the stewards of that are the people that are closest to the environment, the people that are actually doing the jobs. And they will protect the environment and they will protect the coast in their areas. So that's my position on that. I don't have a lot of background in this, but I do believe that the local input is the most important piece in this.
This next question will start with Governor Parnell, and it regards the education lawsuit filed by the Ketchikan Gateway Borough. The Ketchikan Gateway Borough has sued the state of Alaska, claiming that Alaska's constitution requires the state to fully fund local public schools. Do you agree or disagree with the lawsuit?
Do I agree or disagree with the lawsuit? I agree that the state of Alaska has a constitutional obligation to fund a public school system in Alaska, and we do that through the legislative process. And so as this state's governor, I've been proud to support funding for Ketchikan, schools, Prince of Wales Island schools, the entire state of Alaska. I'll continue to do so. In fact, this year I set forward the More Alaska Alaska Education Opportunity Act, and that act created more opportunities for choice within the public school system and created more funding. I've had this this kind of weight resting on my shoulders saying, you know, Parnell's not increasing funding for education. Well, we've increased funding for K-12 education from $1 billion to $1.3 billion over my tenure. I think $300 million increase is a lot of money. And I think it's up to us as your representatives of the public purse to hold districts accountable for performance in this classroom for our kids. I think our kids deserve the best education they can get. So I will continue working to tie new funding to new opportunities for our kids to advance. For example, that's why I champion the Alaska Performance Scholarship. Over 3,000 kids now have earned the right to those scholarships by taking more courses than are required to graduate from high school, and it has set them up for their tuition payments to the University of Alaska system and to job training programs around the state. We're going to make it to that 90% graduation rate and 90% proficiency. We've been growing that graduation rate, but it's going to take more than new funding. It's going to take new funding and new opportunities. Thank you.
Ms. Clift.
Yes, the Alaska Constitution says very clearly that K-12 education will be fully funded. So when I am governor, that will be the one area of the budget that will not be cut. It will be fully funded. And one of the problems that I have seen in reviewing what's going on is that the revenue sharing that is also in the Constitution and by state statute has not been going on as it should be. There should be revenue sharing between the state and the municipalities and the and the boroughs, and we're not getting the full revenue sharing that is required. There are certain things in the Constitution where they say that certain entities are exempt from property tax, for instance, and there's also state statutes that say that, for instance, seniors are exempt for the first $150,000 of their property, and the state should be reimbursing for those property tax exemptions, and that's not going on.
Mr. Walker.
I have had the opportunity to review that piece of litigation. I actually saw it before it was filed. I'm part of the Alaska Municipal League, Alaska Municipal Attorneys Association, and when that was presented by your borough attorney, there was a tremendous amount of support in that organization for that, a tremendous amount of empathy and acknowledgement that something had to be done. You know, it's a bold move for the Ketchikan and Gateway Borough to do what you did. I've been involved in a few bold moves myself, and I know that it can be kind of lonely out there when you take that first step. But there are communities and local governments around the state that are watching it carefully and applauding what you're doing to say this is the fiscal situation that local governments find ourselves in, and the concern is that there are other areas that funding could be shifted to local governments as well, and that just isn't the way the Constitution is set up. So I think it's a bold move. I do support what you're doing. I think there are times to step up and say enough is enough, and I'm sorry that we've reached that point. I'll put it that way. And I know that there's lots of things that must have been done prior to that reaching that point, because I know that was not a knee-jerk reaction. But at some point, you have to say enough is enough and stand up for what you feel is right. That's what you're doing, and I applaud your efforts on that.
This next question will begin with Ms. Clift and regards mining in British Columbia. Proposed large-scale mines in British Columbia have raised concerns about their potential impact on Southeast Alaska's fish stocks and other resources. How can the state of Alaska ensure that our Southeast Alaska resources are protected from any ill effects from BC mines?
That's an excellent question, especially with the that we're looking at the Pebble Mine that's also going to be impacting fishing in the Bristol Bay area. We're looking at what has happened in Canada. And there has Canada had a treaty. They've had a treaty with us since 1909 They're supposed to be taking care of the damage that they're doing. And it, when there's pollution that comes from their mine operations into our waters, it interferes with our fishing industry because we are known for our pristine waters. And this is an important piece. It makes a really bad image. And the I think that we need to hold the Canadians responsible for what's going on. And we need to act in that way. We need to force coalition with the Canadians to make sure that we clean up that problem with the mines. I'm not sure that answers the whole question.
Okay. Mr. Walker.
You know, I think we have a treaty between Alaska and Canada, British Columbia, on those issues. We need to be concerned, be aware of what they're doing, monitor what they're doing, as I'm sure they're concerned about what we may be doing. Fish is a very valuable renewable resource in the state, in this part of the state, and so is mining. And so it's not one or the other necessarily in this situation. I've seen the correspondence from, I think it was from the governor's office on this or his department. I thought it was good. I thought it was appropriate, asking to be involved in reviewing the process that's going on. So we're cognizant of what is going on. You know, we need to, we just need to be very aware of what they're doing to see if it's going to impact our fish. We need to be aggressive in that regard. It's more of a collaborative arrangement that's available to us, and I think we ought to take advantage of that, and I believe we are taking advantage of that. So it's potentially a very, very serious issue if it's going to impact our fish in this part of Alaska. So I'm glad we're doing what we're doing. I believe we might be able to do more, be a bit more aggressive, but I'm glad that this administration is doing what they're doing on that.
Governor Parnell.
Thank you, Bill. Appreciate it. Because I do. DEC and Fish and Game have been incredibly active on this issue. Once, with respect to Mount Pawley Dam breach in particular, they were on it with the Canadian authorities, making sure that they understood what was released, and they are monitoring it with the Canadian government to understand whether there will be any impact on fish in the Fraser River there that would influence our own stocks. We've also injected ourselves as state agencies in the Canadian regulatory process on other mines as well, and that is a key step as well. So knowing what's happening on the other side of the border and being a part of those discussions, making sure that we have a seat at the table, because the impacts that we will feel on our residents if something happens on the other side of the border just makes sense, and it's something that we have undertaken as our responsibility as the administration serving you. Thank you.
All right. This next question deals with Alaska's elders. It will begin with Mr. Walker. And the question is, the Alaska Commission on Aging compares the increase in Alaska's senior population to a silver tsunami. How will your administration address access to medical care, housing, caregiver support for the growing segment of Alaska population?
Well, you know, I've not heard that term, a silver tsunami. I'm not sure I'm supposed to be part of that or not, but how we treat our elders is tells what kind of a population we are. My father spent his final years in the Palmer Pioneer Home, and I'll never forget the kind of care he received there. That's a very important thing that we do, and some of the concern I have is that on the some of the state employee retirees, the insurance coverage has been weakened over the years, and I'm very concerned about that. I've heard from a number of people on that in that regard. But what I would like to see is to make sure that the aging population is able to stay as long as they can in their own residence. You know, I know there's programs available to allow for that, assistance for that, and I think that my emphasis will be to enable them to for as long as possible, as long as they're comfortable and they're safe, to be able to remain in their own residence. You know, we have been growing the Pioneer Home program in Alaska. I think is absolutely phenomenal. They're all over the state, and that's great. There's typically a waiting list every place to get in because they're so well done. That's one of the things I want to have a growing economy for, so we can be able to afford to do more for that population. That is a concern I have. That if we don't, some will need to leave Alaska and not be in their region where they live. I was in Kodiak recently and saw the number that could stay within the Kodiak area and not move to another region away from their family and loved ones. So keeping them in their own area is absolutely critical.
Governor Parnell.
With aging parents and with us aging, I mean, it's clearly clearly an issue for us. And it comes down to probably three values. And one is just the family, dignity, and safety. And when I think about staying at home for as long as a person can, I think Bill's right there. I absolutely do. And we have a pretty good and wide-ranging network of community-based services for that. That's something that we could potentially augment if we're working smart in some areas, and those areas are working really well. When it comes to just personal dignity, I just visited the veterans home, the Pioneer Home there in the Matanuska Valley just within the last week, and saw our wonderful veterans who are being cared for there, and was thankful for the care that they receive and how it dignifies them as human beings and as veterans of our state and keeps them safe as well. Our administration invested with the tribal healthcare system in elder living facilities in rural Alaska. But I think we have to do more. And one of those areas that we're exploring currently, and one of the things I'm going to be proposing, is to incentivize assisted living facilities and the construction and operation of them in Alaska. I've already invited several of your Ketchikan residents into that conversation, and we'll be doing more of that. But the bottom line is we have got to do our best to keep our elders, our seniors in the state, in a home or family setting for as long as we can, and after that in assisted living facilities that give them the dignity they deserve as human beings and provide that safe, loving, and caring environment. Thank you.
Ms. Clift.
Well, I hadn't heard that term before either, the silver tsunami. Yes, we do have an aging population, and that's a big plus. I think that keeping our aging population here in Alaska is really important because, we do have a lot of people that go down to the lower 48 for part of the year just to get to a warmer climate and to have a more comfortable life. So we need to think about that, keeping our elders comfortable here. One of the things that works is a little less expensive than putting people in a home is to have home health care come into the home. And it's something that doesn't have to cost as much as residential care. And that's one way that we can increase that home health care, and that will help the situation with our state coffers having enough money to take care of some of these things. It was interesting that Bill Walker brought up the TRS-PERS healthcare program, which is part of the State of Alaska Employees Programs. And one thing that I myself am part of that, and one of the things that I noticed is that when you get old enough for Medicare, then your premiums change because you have to start paying for the Medicare on top of paying for your premiums for your state health care. So, yeah, there's my yellow card. Anyway, I think home hospice is the way to go. I think that home health care is the way to go and to make costs a little bit better and more comfort for our elders.
Okay, this will be our last question. It will start with Governor Parnell. Ongoing drug trafficking arrests in Ketchikan indicate that state ferries continue to be among drug traffickers' favorite methods for bringing their drugs into Alaska. What can the state do to deter the use of ferries for this purpose?
Drug trafficking is a statewide issue. It's not just a Marine Highway System issue. And throughout my tenure as governor, I've worked to increase law enforcement across the state in building our capacity for drug interdiction as well as for the safety of our residents by other means. When it comes to specifically to the ferry system, I first became aware of this issue, I want to say within just fairly recently in the spring when somebody raised it to me here. And I went to the Commissioner of Public Safety and asked what could be done. And we can certainly work with communities to meet ferries and figure a way that the state troopers, for example, could use dogs to go find drugs before they get on board. That's one way. And, of course, it costs money. And I'm willing to work with communities to do that if you want to put public safety dollars to that effort, if you think that would be a huge help in Southern Southeast. So thank you.
Ms. Clift.
Well, that's interesting because I just found out that Ketchikan has a big problem with drugs. I found that out this morning. And now I have a key piece because of the ferries. It is important that we control the drugs coming into the village and into the towns. And I think that again, putting more money into law enforcement in this area would be advisable. We need to have a way to determine that the drugs don't even get on the ferries. And I think that we do need to look for those things when people are getting off the ferries. And besides that, I don't really have any good answers except that we need to make sure that there are more things for people to do recreationally than to get into drugs.
Mr. Walker?
Three things. Drug dogs, and drug dogs. That is the most effective way they're highly effective. Their ability, highly trained, a little expensive to get trained, not that expensive once they're trained, but that is the most effective, has been proven time and time again. You know, if you have a captive location on a state ferry, having a dog, then people know there'll be a drug dog on that ferry. I think that'll be a tremendous deterrent to those that choose to transport that illegal substance on our state ferry system. So, drug dogs.
All right, we're going to begin our closing statements, and we will begin with Mr. Walker.
Jim. You know, I had a prepared statement. I'm not going to give my prepared statement. I'm just going to talk to Ketchikan the way I feel most comfortable talking to people, and it's from the heart. You know, when I filed to run for governor, and Byron Mallott filed sometime after that, I flew to Juneau and sat down with him, and we decided we were going to have a campaign where we didn't have research on each other, we didn't attack each other, and about a month or so ago it became evident that it made sense for us to join our campaigns together. But we got to know each other over that year. We realized that our passion for Alaska far exceeded our partisan differences, and so we did come together, and it's been, we didn't pick the name, but it's been used, referred to as a unity party. You know, I look at the wonderful things happening in the state when the bipartisan coalition came together and created funding vehicles for many things, including the Alaska Marine Highway project, the ferries are being built. We think it's time Alaskans come together again, and that with the fiscal crisis that we're in, that we're in a $7 million a day deficit that we use of our savings to do what we do, we need a bipartisan administration, not made up of one part or the other, but just made up of Alaskans across the board, the best and brightest Alaskans. It won't be a bipartisan, it'll be a no-partisan administration. So, you know, and we will look at working with people. We have looked at people that are running against us. We will look at people that are endorsed other candidates. That doesn't make any difference to us. We just want to bring Alaskans together to solve these issues. We are in a crisis. We came together as Alaskans after the earthquake to rebuild our state, floods around the state, various disasters. We're in one again. We have a very bright future. We have an incredibly bright future. I have my four children and soon to be four grandchildren. I want to have the incredible benefit I have had in this state. We know we can do that, but we know we can do that if we work together. You know, somebody asked me recently in a I've been in a lot of parades. I usually drive a piece of equipment, a 966 or a 980 loader. I get criticized if it's not a U.S.-made, so I try to make it a U.S.-made loader. And someone asked me in Fairbanks after the Golden Days parade, they said, why do you work so hard in this election? Why are you working day in and day out for this since April of 2013? And I said, let me ask you a question. If your family was out in a boat fishing and you were taking on water, how hard would you bail? And that's what I'm doing. That's exactly what I'm doing. I was on a radio show recently. Someone said, "How do you fear losing the election?" I said, absolutely not. I don't fear losing an election. I fear losing my state. And that's why I'm running for governor. I would ask for your vote on November 4th. Thank you.
Ms. Clift.
Well, as I was talking before at the beginning, I am the Libertarian candidate, and I am not conservative or liberal. However, I am running against, actually there are four of us, and there are three other candidates, and all three of the other candidates are fiscally conservative, just as I am, and also socially conservative, which I am not. As a libertarian, I am fiscally responsible and socially tolerant. And we haven't talked about any of these social issues today in this debate. So I would be very willing to talk to anybody after the debate. I'll stay for about a half hour afterwards to talk to people, and I'd be glad to talk to you about those things. I am running against, I am, first of all, running against the high overspending that we are doing in the budget, just as Mr. Walker is running against that. And Mr. Parnell is fiscally conservative also, but there has been a lot of spending. So I just want you to know that I am a former school teacher, and I'm going to get out my little red pen, and I am going to use that line item veto to veto any expenses that are duplicate, wasteful, or don't serve individual rights. And individual rights are the backbone of a libertarian philosophy. And it's the main difference between Republicans and libertarians, and the main difference between libertarians and Democrats is that we are always going for the individual liberty. We don't believe in banning things, and we don't believe in preventing people from doing things that harm no one else. So I want you to understand that I will veto any legislation that interferes with individual liberty. Mr. Parnell is a big government Republican, and a lot of people view him as a representative of oil companies. Mr. Walker is a big government ex-Republican who is represents a lot of the unions. And they're going to tell you what you want to hear today, and I won't. The only purpose of government is to protect individual liberty, life, and property. And I want to let you know that I will protect your rights to electronic and medical privacy, marriage, family, and religious decisions, victimless crime, business and free trade, and gun rights. Sometimes they talk about the Libertarian Party and they say we're about guns and weed. That's not exactly true, but we do want to protect your rights. So, again, I want to emphasize that I am very different from my opponents. And the way that I am different is in the area of social tolerance. And I've run out of time again. So thank you very much.
Governor Parnell.
Thank you. And thanks, Ketchikan, for taking time to just come in on a sunny day and be here and sit with us for a little over an hour. That shows your concern, and it shows your just your desire to build this great Alaska together. As I look forward, I see blue skies for Alaskans. You know, as I think about what we've done here in this area with the shipyard, with tourism, with mining on the horizon when it comes to Bokan and Niblack, when it comes to timber having a little bit of a step forward here, but we're still going to drive for more sales there. Even just in the micro or small picture look of this area, our future is brighter today than it was 5 years ago. But statewide, it is as well. We've made historic progress on a gas line. That's the kind of progress I want to continue growing, is that growing that economic opportunity for us as a people. I want to address a few statements, one of which was actually missing from this debate, and that has to do with I did hear some statements from Mr. Walker about fiscal responsibility, and just 2 days ago in Juneau, we had a big discussion about his desire to cut 16% across the board from the budget. How many ferries is that? That's two or three, probably. Now, Bill Walker did say he supported building the two ferries here in Ketchikan. So he and I are aligned on that. But on a 16% budget reduction in 1 year, that is what that requires as a candidate to put forth a plan as to how to do it. And we have seen no plan.
When he spoke about the wonderful bipartisan majority in the Senate, those were our big spending years, folks. What happens when you bring together a bipartisan majority in the Senate is they don't have one direction together, and so they have to spend their way past their differences. They have to kind of check the tough issues at the door because they can't agree on them, and then when they get together in the room, they have to spend their way past their differences. So we had the highest spending under the Senate bipartisan majority. With this majority, I have led in making record spending reductions. We went from $8 billion from that last year of the Senate bipartisan majority, went from $8 billion to $7 billion, and now this year to $5.9 billion. That's being responsible with the people's money. And we did it not by doing big across-the-board cuts. I went after the single biggest cost driver in the operating budget, that unfunded pension liability. That single act of paying down our debt and lowering annual payments, that's saving us hundreds of millions of dollars across the next 20 years, every year. That's every year savings. So I have a belief in our future, not just because we have the resources, but because we have people like you to step forward and grasp the opportunities in front of us. I think we're on the right track for growth. I don't think it's time to change horses midstream. And I appreciate your vote on November 4. Thank you.
All right. Well, thanks to all the candidates and all of you in the audience for coming. The room will be open for a short while for those who would like to talk with them.
Thanks.
And have a nice day. Get out and vote.
Please. Thank you.